This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get you up to date with some headlines. Well, college football, they got a delay right now because of heavy lightning in Michigan, Michigan State, so that game has not started. In other games, Oklahoma leading TCU 21-7, Iowa 6, Maryland nothing. Temple leads Cincinnati 10-7, Wisconsin 14, Illinois 0, Buffalo and Toledo, they're tied at 7. Arkansas leads Tulsa 3-0, Auburn 7, Ole Miss 3, Northwestern over Rutgers 7-3, Army 14, Miami of Ohio 7, North Carolina leads Syracuse 7-0. It's Virginia 7, Duke nothing. Those are the scores in college football. In baseball last night, 7-2 victory for Milwaukee. They advance now to Game 7. That game's going to be today, going against the L.A. Dodgers. Great ending to the National League Championship Series. In football, Marshawn Lynch has a groin injury that he suffered in the game on Sunday. He's going to be out at least a month, and the possibility of surgeries there and maybe going on injured reserve. We may have seen the last of beast mode. Carlos Hyde, running back for the Cleveland, traded over to Jacksonville for a fifth-round pick. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, boy, the excitement is really building over at Washington State over in Pullman.
Yes, it is, John. It's going to be quite a day over there in Pullman. The game day crew is there this morning. Did you get up early for it, John?
I did not, no. I'm still trying to catch up on my sleep from London, so.
I hear you. I've been having some sleep issues myself. I'm going to I recorded it, though, to see it. But the excitement is building. It's going to be a fantastic day of college football, I think, in the Northwest.
It really is. Because, I mean, first off, we get the opening 12:40 kickoff between Colorado and Washington, and that's going to be a good one. And I'm still amazed the way the schedule has worked for the Huskies, in the sense that it seems like every week one of the teams they have to play is kind of a top 25-type team. Here's Colorado. They're 5-1. Maybe not great, but not that. I mean, that's going to be an interesting game.
It is, and they're catching them at the right time. I mean, Colorado had delusions of grandeur, I'm going to guess, John. They were 5-0 and ranked 19th last week, and you had Mike Golick saying on ESPN Radio that, you know, if they ran the table, they might be a team that would be considered for the college football playoff. And I think realistically, we talked to their play-by-play guy this week. They knew they weren't that good, but they did not expect to lose to USC like they did, 31-20. So they play a Washington team. What's interesting, John, is the line on this one is about 17 points. Washington has dominated Colorado the last couple of years, and including the championship game. I think that was 2 years ago. They beat them badly, beat them by, I think, 37-10 last year. Washington is a big favorite in this one, but Washington is coming off, you know, a tough one themselves. So it'll be interesting to see what this game looks like. My feeling is it's going to be much, much better than the odds makers think, and I think Colorado will give Washington a good game, because I think unlike the Seahawks, who bounced back from that Rams game, a game they lost, and felt positive about it, I think Washington is still probably kicking themselves for the Oregon game.
Yeah, you'd have to think that they are, because you know, that was such a tough loss. I mean, missed field goal put them in a position to, you know, they had everything all set there, and boom, that all kind of goes against them. And there's got to be a lingering effect about that.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, it's one thing if you're the Seahawks in that game against the Rams, where they were an underdog and the Rams had been rolling, and surely, I mean, there was disappointment at the end of the game, but you come out of it with such a good feeling that geez, you know, we went toe-to-toe with the best team in the league, perhaps should have won the game. You can feel angry about it because you played so well, whereas, you know, Washington, you know, against Oregon, Oregon's good, and the game was on the road, but they didn't play, I don't think, as well as they thought they could. And I think any time where the coach's decision kind of enters into it, which it did in that game, you know, it just, if you're a player, you kind of have a feeling of powerlessness. So, you know, everyone, you know, it's kind of why the Pete Carroll approach works so well in college football, of taking every game as a championship opportunity, and you know, you don't get too high, you don't get too low, you just stay at the same plane, and that's a tough thing to do when you're a college kid. So I'm curious to see how Washington responds. It's a benefit to them that they're playing at home, obviously, and there'll be a nice crowd there at Husky Stadium, but I think Colorado's ready to give them a game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fascinating one to try to watch and very interesting to try to watch. What do you like about Washington State and what Mike Leach has done this year?
I think I'm most impressed by, and not surprised by, but most impressed by the fact that much like he did in another, you know, Mike Leach coached in another very difficult place before he came here in Lubbock, Texas, not exactly the top spot in Texas where it was tough to recruit. And he created a program there that at Texas Tech that just reloaded like the great programs did. I mean, you know, you lose guys to graduation, you lose quarterbacks to the draft, and instead of falling apart for a year or two and having to rebuild it, you keep winning. And that's a new phenomenon to a degree at Washington State. I mean, Mike Price had it going on for a little while there where that would work out, and they had a couple of runs of consistent winning, but it was a very difficult thing to do at Washington State, and I don't think people were convinced that Mike Leach had done it. And then, of course, you had the tragedy with the quarterback, with Tyler, and something that really would take a lot out of an organization, a lot out of a program, and they managed to get a quarterback to come in there to play well, and they've played exceedingly well. Now look, we're only at the halfway point of the season, so we have learned through the Mariners last year and through many teams in the past that you don't want to get too carried away halfway through a season, but you got to like what Washington State has done in terms of just having a program that reloads, that you know, attracts a certain kind of player to Mike Leach's offense in particular, but they're good on defense too. So I don't want to take anything away from there, but they have become a program that kind of reloads rather than rebuilds, and that's an exciting thing, I think, for Washington State, and they can take a huge step in this game against Oregon. Oregon, you know, obviously is coming off the Washington game with a lot of momentum. They're not looking past Washington State in any way, shape, or form. They've lost three straight to the Cougars. Got crushed by them last year. I think it was 33-10 in a game that Justin Herbert didn't play in. There's not a weather factor, obviously. It looked like it's a beautiful day over there in eastern Washington, so weather's not going to be a factor. The crowd is going to be amped up like no crowd probably at any Cougar game has ever been amped up. So very, very exciting day for Washington State, and very, very impressive performance by Mike Leach, and just finding, and everyone kind of finding out that he is just a guy who reloads his program.
Mm-hmm. No, he's really good, and I think the biggest thing, and I think caught me by surprise, is just how well they've done on defense, because you know, you have changed, yeah. They lose a very good defensive coordinator, looks like they were able to bring one back, and you know, that's something that you would expect, not a lot of great defense from a team that gives up and scores so many points.
Well, you wouldn't, and it's we'll see what they can do today, though. I mean, as much as their defense has been really good, Washington's defense was the best in the Pac-12, and Oregon, you know, moved it up and down the field on them. So I'll be very curious to see what they can do today against Oregon, but I feel like it's going to be a shootout, John, a game in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, easily. I think you can expect that, and that's what's going to be so much fun to kind of watch that type of game. So, how much did you enjoy
back and forth on a beautiful day in the Palouse?
Right. How much did you enjoy last night's baseball game?
Loved it, because I love a game 7. I mean, the Brewers kind of took, I'm not going to say they took the air out of it, but took a little bit of the excitement out of it in the first inning. Except if you were in Milwaukee, they went absolutely bananas. But I was amazed that the Brewers confidently handed the ball to ex-Mariner Wade Miley. And Wade Miley was good. You know, he gave them a solid start. You know, and again, the definition of a solid start has certainly changed dramatically. And in the postseason, even more so. You go four into the fifth inning, which is what Miley did, and it wasn't eligible for the win. You got to pitch 5 complete. But they got a very good start out of him. Their bullpen was not overused in that game. They got a couple of bonus extra runs, so to win it 7-2, to give us what we needed in this postseason. I mean, this postseason I'm not going to say it's been a disappointment, because it's never a disappointment, but it has lacked drama for the most part. And now we've got a game 7, which is always dramatic in a series that's gone back and forth a little bit. So I was very happy to see the Brewers win that game, and I'm very much looking forward to game 7 today.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of fun. It's like, who do you think has the edge in this one? Is it going to be the home team or the Dodgers?
It's a great question, John. I mean, you know, the Dodgers, let's look at them first. I mean, they have got momentum in their favor, obviously. Experience in their favor. This is their 6th year in the postseason. They got to a Game 7 in the World Series last year. They've been in most circumstances. like this. So, I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to be tight or anything like that. It's a little bit different maybe being on the road. The pitching advantage is tough. Shaxton is the 15-game winner for the Brewers. Walker Buehler is a rookie for the Dodgers who's pitched very, very well. But, you know, I mean, any one of those guys getting any trouble whatsoever, there'll be a change immediately. So I think that the Brewers probably have a little bit of an edge. But, boy, it's tough to call. I mean, it's tough to call. Miller Park has been a big home field advantage, and I'm gonna go with the Brewers, even though I picked the Dodgers at the start of the year to win the whole thing. I think the Brewers have got the momentum going, and I think they're gonna win a thriller.
Mm-hmm. That could be interesting to see how that goes. Yeah, that's gonna be
It should be.
No, that's going to be good. And of course, again, I thought it was a little bit of a surprise that the Red Sox edged the Astros, because I thought the Astros were just so good. But Red Sox.
Well, the Red Sox are really good too. I mean, yeah. As it turns out, and you're right. I mean, they sucked all the drama out of that series. The Red Sox are legit. We obviously know that. They won 108 games. If they roll through the World Series, just speculating now, after rolling through the postseason like they did, they're going to take their place among the greatest single season teams in baseball history with 108 wins if they are able to be dominant in the World Series. And they have been very, very impressive in doing it and beating the Astros when the Astros, were at full strength. I mean, that's the other thing too. I mean, the Astros had George Springer was hot coming into that game. They had Correa back at shortstop playing well. Altuve's hitting the ball well. The great pitching staff, they knocked out Verlander, who had been an absolute stud. I mean, almost unbeatable in elimination games. So I was a little surprised too that they did it as easily as they did. And they get a little bit of rest, so they will be their bullpen, all of them will be completely ready. Chris Sale is their one question mark to a degree. I mean, I know he had stomach flu, which is why they kept him out of the game that David Price pitched in, but he hasn't shown the same velocity towards the end of the year that he did at the start of the year. But otherwise they're healthy, they're hot, and they're certainly confident. I mean, that's gotta be the other thing too, is beating the Astros. Beating the World Series champs, they've got to play with confidence. So they await the winner, and it'll be very tough on either Milwaukee or Boston, or the Dodgers to handle the Red Sox.
Oh, no doubt. But that's going to be kind of fun. And so then finally, looking at what's happening in the National Football League, looks like they did say that Bradley McDougal, at least Al Riveron, the head of supervisor officials, that should have been a penalty. But nevertheless, I don't think it's going to get this team to back down a little bit, because I think that, you can see they still want to deliver the boom.
I was glad to hear that. Not that I want to see Bradley McDougal get in any trouble or anything like that, but, I mean, it certainly did look to me like That was a clear example of going with the helmet, even though his shoulder hit him first. I don't think he did it intentionally, of course. It does show what you said, though. I mean, he is, I'll be curious to see if they look closer at it, John, because they don't want teams delivering the boom anymore.
No.
I mean, that's not the NFL way anymore. The NFL way is to protect. And at the league meetings, I know Tom Wassel asked you about it yesterday. There was no talk about we gotta rein in these penalties. I mean, the owners are happy with protecting their major investments. So we'll see if this impacts the Seahawks in terms of getting any calls against them. Normally it seems to me like it does, but take nothing away from Bradley McDougal, who's been the star of the defense so far this year.
He really has. I mean, I just wonder if he is going to get Pro Bowl attention, because I think he deserves it. I think he's played that well.
You would think if the Pro Bowl was going to be announced at this point in time, he sure would, wouldn't he?
I would think so. I mean, I know he gets good numbers as far as Pro Football Focus. You can see that, I mean, he's all over the field making plays. I mean, I think he's had a fantastic start of the season.
Yeah, I do too. And then you said the right word there, a fantastic start. There's a lot of football yet to be played, John. A lot of football yet to be played, and I'm going to watch in particular tomorrow that Lions Dolphins game, because this is a game the Lions should win. They're going up against Brock Osweiler. If they do, they come into the game with the Seahawks at 3-3, kind of harboring the same kind of hopes, kind of in the same spot the Seahawks are in, and that would be a very big game for the Hawks. On the road, even though they got a preponderance of home games left. If they can get a win in Detroit, that goes a long way towards getting them in a favorable position for the wild card, I would think.
Okay, so what's on the schedule for the Groz today?
Football, buddy.
There you
football,
go.
Football, football, football.
Well, a little baseball, too, right? I would hope.
And then, of course, game seven, of course.
Well, enjoy yourself. Great to chat with you. And, of course, we will talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good, John. Thanks, buddy.
Dave Grosby. Of course, Bob Groz and Tom weekdays here on 710 ESPN from 12 until 3. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rasheed in Brothel. Hey, Rasheed, how are you?
I'm doing well, Professor. How are you doing?
Doing good. I recovered from London, I think. I'm still trying to get all the strength back, but that was a long trip.
Man, I was so... You know, I travel a lot out of the country and stuff, and I would have, like, if I thought you were going to have so much trouble with the adapters and stuff, I would have prepared you, because it can be so troubling once you get there and you know that everything you have doesn't work properly, you know?
Well, and it's funny because, you know, I was lucky enough, my next door neighbor works for Boeing, used to go to London often. I mean, like every other week. And so he gave me two adapters, but I don't know what it was, because they were kind of the rounded adapters. And of course, if anybody knows what we're talking about, is that yeah. What the voltage overseas is two times what you have here in the U.S. And so what has to happen is that you need an adapter to be able to plug in things. And so it was round, and then of course I get there and it's like a three-prong thing that was wide, and it's like, uh-oh, this isn't going to work.
Yep. Yeah, but Professor, I'm so stoked up about the Seahawks, but I actually wanted to talk to you about a couple of things because Seahawks are on a bye, so a couple of things. You know, this situation with Arizona really bothers me, and I would like to take you back to, like, when Mike Tomlin took over Pittsburgh, he was a 4-3 Tony Dungy disciple, you know.
Right.
But Pittsburgh didn't need, like, a defensive coordinator. They needed a head coach. And if Ken Whisenhunt hadn't gone and taken the Arizona job, I'm sure, like, he would have retained the same staff and, like, not to fix what wasn't broken and stuff. He came there, he became a leader of men, and in a year, they won the Super Bowl. Now, Steve Wilks, I know he has a defensive pedigree, but it wasn't broken. They had a good offense. There was a decent offense, and they had a really good defense with James Betcher. He should have made sure that he retained it and then just evolved. Why change it? And, you know, I hate when teams don't learn from other teams, and we keep saying it's a copycat league, and we make mistakes that other teams don't and stuff, and that really bothered me. And I feel bad for McCoy, but he had to go. But I'd make the blame at Steve Wilks and then Steve Keim as well, too. They should have addressed everything, and they should have seen what was not broken and then continue with that. So my take is that they should have retained James Betcher, and this team would have been totally different.
Right. Yeah, because right now, well, of course, if you're going to be the head coach and you're a defensive head coach, you want to run your own style. It's no different than Sean McDermott going over and taking over for Buddy Ryan. I mean, not Buddy Ryan, but, yeah, of course, yeah, taking over for
Rex Ryan.
And, you know, he has his scheme. And again, the scheme works. I mean, yeah, the guy was a very good defensive coordinator and a very good coach. And so you don't want to come in and just copy what somebody else did, and you want to try to advance it. But unfortunately, it just didn't work. And it hasn't worked.
I mean,
worked
they didn't have the personnel. That's the thing. I mean, all the personnel was a 3-4 and stuff. And they have some, like, good performances this season. But the other thing, Professor, I wanted to discuss was this Michael Kendrick's punishment or suspension. It really bothers me. If I take you back to, like, Michael Vick, and, you know, when he was convicted and he was going to jail, what his agent did was ask the NFL that he's going to spend time in jail, and you take that time equal to suspension. And now they've been suspended him indefinitely. He's going to go to prison and serve at least, like, a year and stuff. So he's going to miss games anyway. So I don't know, like, this indefinite suspension really hurts the Seahawks, and because I thought he was playing well, and, like, the weak link right now in our defense, which is amazing, is a little bit the play at linebacker, and if he had him and then KJ Wright coming back, I think this defense could be, like, top three, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that would have helped, no doubt, but, you know, that's the unfortunate thing, is that here's a new thing that they have. I mean, you know, nobody has been in that position for any kind of a suspension. And so you kind of wonder, it's like, okay, so how do you try to handle it? And that's the way they handle it. And of course, it's not going to be popular. It's not necessarily going to be good, but you know, that's just kind of the bad nature of the way it goes. And you know, you knew he was going to have to serve something. And, you know, he appealed. And, of course, you know, when you appeal, you usually have no chance of winning.
Yeah, because, I mean, the CBA, they need to address this. They need to have, some black and white. Because Roger Goodell, as successful as he's been, and I really like Roger overall. But the thing is, he cannot, I don't like being him the judge, jury, and execution, whatever. But he just makes rules as they go along.
True.
I mean, there's nothing written and stuff. But Professor,
I agree with you, and I side with the players. They should have more of an independent arbiter that's going to be making these judgments, as opposed to the rule of Roger Goodell.
Yeah, exactly. But Professor, lastly, I'm so pumped about the Seahawks, and just one play where I think somebody highlighted on 710 as well, that play that was, I think it was Greg Bell when he was talking to you, when Russell Wilson dropped the ball, the fumble, or the bad snap and stuff. And he had so much time to gather it, actually step up in the pocket and make a throw to David Moore for a touchdown. And we've come along so, and I think Russell Wilson now is getting used to this time in the pocket and stuff. And I see us doing well with so many home games. I think we can be a wild card.
I agree, and I've never varied from that. I thought the running game would get better, because the formula is, if you have a top five quarterback, which the Seahawks have, you give up less than 25 points a game, and you run the football, you win 8-9 games, maybe 10. And that's the formula, and that's where they are right now. Hey, Rasheed, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, sir.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
How was the trip?
It was okay. I mean, it was long, I can tell you that.
Yeah, you are adjusting to the time now?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was debating whether to go to a game this weekend because I was thinking about it, but I'm kind of glad that I'm not, so I just want to kind of take it easy today. Obviously, I'll be watching football all day tomorrow and, writing and doing all that fun stuff. So, no, I think this is kind of working out, and maybe, just maybe, get on the treadmill.
Okay. As a longtime Seahawks fan for 40 years, I'd like to pay homage to Paul Allen.
Yes.
A great man and very thoughtful to many of us here, to all of us Seahawks fans in Seattle.
He's meant so much. I mean, what he did was fantastic. And not only did he save it, but he made it. I mean, he made this such a great franchise. He built the 12s. The fans responded. I mean, it's an incredible story.
And I had a memory once when we were in King Street Station for the boat. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this or not, but I gave you a high five when the vote was announced that it passed.
Yes, because that was huge. And I mean, and that's the thing. I know we talked to John Nordstrom about that, and that wasn't easy because, on the other side of the state, the vote was against. And I think it was like 50.5 to 49.5 or something like that as far as the vote.
Oh, yeah. It was a narrow escape.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, that's where John Nordstrom explained it so well this week. It was not an easy thing that Paul was doing because, first off, I mean, he took the tact wisely. It's like, listen, I'll buy this team, but I'm not going to keep it in the kingdom. And so he had to work with the politicians, and they responded, and then you get CenturyLink. That worked out well. Then you come back, and you, Ken Behring was trying to demand more money than he probably should. That's just so typical Ken. And so you wonder if that was going to work out. And then they had to get the ownership thing fixed as far as cross-ownership with him owning an NBA team. All those things went in there, but, hey, he stayed with it, and he got it done.
Yeah. One last thing. Jason Jinks on Twitter made a interesting question just now about what did the Seahawks victory in Super Bowl 48 meant to you? Oh, it meant a lot. Seeing the Seahawks win the Super Bowl and seeing a major championship in 34 years, because I was 9 years old when the Sonics won the championship in 1979.
Mm-hmm. So exactly did it mean to you? Is just the fact that now you had a chance to relive what was the feel of a championship?
Yeah, that exactly, and that was a pretty good question there, and you might want to check that out on Twitter.
Okay, that sounds good. Hey, Patrick, right, thank you for the phone call.
Yeah.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Sean. And are you calling from Arizona? Hey, Sean, how are you?
Yes, sir. How you doing today, bud?
Doing well.
Good. Hey, I was wondering, after the passing of Paul Allen, and we don't really have an owner right now, does that mean all our extensions and any trades that we might do are all on hold? Or
no, everything is the same. Everything under contract is going to stay under contract, and the operation is not affected in any way. Under the circumstance, I know that they submitted a plan to the National Football League, and they had the owners' meeting. And so, at some point, I'm sure that Paul's sister is going to be taking over, and then she'll have to decide, long term, not necessarily short term, what she wants to do with the franchise. So no, it's everything stays as it is. The only difference is that because again, they had to have that kind of pre-approved, and that was the plan, and that's where it's going to go.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, man. Have a great day, bud.
All right, Sean, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here as we get on. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Hey, Jet.
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Not too bad. It was funny, last time we talked a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how the Jets and Seahawks had to get their running game in order to find some success on offense, and it was like from our mouths to the offensive coordinator's ears, because they've both been running machines these last 2 weeks.
I mean, isn't that amazing? I mean, particularly, too, it's like, and last I checked, I mean, Bilal Powell's a starter, but Isaiah Crowell was able to come in there and, get the 200-plus yards. That was amazing.
Yeah, they just ran all over them. I think what you're seeing is you got a lot of these teams on defense now where basically they're playing with like seven defensive backs. Mm-hmm. They call them linebackers, but they're really just kind of blown up safeties. And they're off. The defensive linemen are smaller, thinner, quicker, but you don't have the beef up front. And I think that's really Denver's problem, is that they've really gone away from a couple of the beefier guys up front, like, for example, when Malik Johnson left, they really haven't replaced him with anybody big up front. So, it's been...
Yeah, and of course, they do have one big run stopper, Dom Pico, the former Bengal, but all you have to do is go three receivers, and he's off the field.
Yeah, exactly. So you're seeing that more and more with these defenses. So I think, and just run right at them, man. They can't stop you. They just don't have the beef to stop you. And, I think once they figure this out, the running game is back in order. And, I just don't see why anybody ever thought the running game went out of vogue.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, the rules have opened everything up to, and everybody's trying to turn into a 7-on-7, pass fest. But I still think go old school and just run right at them.
Well, and that's what and it's funny because, here in this town, still there's that open criticism that Brian Schottenheimer needs to be more creative and all that crazy stuff. And I just don't buy that because, get the running game going first. It opens up the passing game. You get the play action going, and then just do it that way. Go back to the old 2011, 2012 style because it can work. It keeps your defense off the field, and look how effective it's been. 3-1, 155 rushing yards a game, and, if necessary, then Russell Wilson gets hot in the fourth quarter and gets his job done.
And it's just like, Rex Ryan had it together with the ground and pound concept. The problem was he just didn't have a quarterback that could do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you had a quarterback other than Sanchez that could actually deliver the ball, with that running game and that offensive line that the Jets had when Ryan was first there.
Right.
And that's where I think they've got to try to get to is it's really, the game, while it has evolved, the concepts really haven't changed. And you just really can't you need time of possession because you can't keep your defense – on the field that long because they just can't keep it up. So you got to have some kind of possession going for you.
Agreed.
So it's like nothing has really changed. It's just, I don't know. It just seems to me a simple concept. But,
you even look at the Rams. Sure, they're a passing team with the three receivers set, but everything is revolved around Todd Gurley, the running back. And yep. I mean, that's just the reality of what it is. And, you know, you try to take advantage of the running back. And because really, if you run the football, then you have some chance to get the play action passes, and then you can go fast paced. You can do that. But if you can't run the football, look at the problem this team has had for the last couple of years, and even the Jets, you know, and they didn't get the running game going with Matt Forte. So I just think that that's the right way to do it. And I think that you can see that you get an attitude when you get that running game going like it was.
Yeah, well, two thoughts. As far as the Jets are concerned, the last 2 weeks is the first time you've actually started to see some play-action passes.
Mm-hmm.
And because what they were doing the first few weeks, you didn't figure out what they were going to do just by their alignment. You know, but now, now that they've been able to run the ball, they keep it back in the backfield, they do the play-action pass, so you freeze the linebackers. You know, that's what you got to do. The second thing is, and I think you've really seen it with Seattle, let the big fatties up front run block. Get them going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of having them back on their heels the entire game. The offensive linemen mostly don't like the pass block. Get them out there. Let them mash somebody.
Right.
You know, and then I think it helps the offensive line catch a groove. And it's just, you know, I mean, the running game is just better for everybody involved.
Oh, agreed. And that's what, you know, and again, you know, get that down first. And then, first off, you have to have the talent to be able to do it. I'm just amazed how the Fluker, Sweezy, Britt combination has really sealed things off. It's made it easier for Jermaine Ifedi. I mean, you know, Dwayne Brown's all solid. And you look at the Jets, and I mean, it's not a talented offensive line, but it's made them look so much better.
Yes, because they're not back on their heels, you know, trying to catch everybody. And that's hard to do. And that's hard to do for an entire game, especially when you got all these specialty speed rushers. They're just pinning their ears back, and they know what's coming. You know, it doesn't really give the offensive lineman much of a chance. So it's just so much better. I don't know. It doesn't seem that hard to figure out. But geez, I mean, the results we've seen, it's like what have you guys been thinking about this? Mm-hmm. Like, overthink this. Let's don't get too cute.
Right, and they try to get too cute. So are you happy with Sam Darnold right now?
Yes, John. How can you not be? I mean, he's really evolving. You can see he's not quite thinking as much as he was those first 3-4 weeks. It was really slowing him down. And, of course, also the last couple weeks, he hasn't been running for his life either. So that certainly helps. But I think you got to like the evolution. He's really not making big mistakes. The other thing that's nice is he doesn't repeat his mistakes. I mean, that was one of the things that drove me crazy with Sanchez. I mean, he makes the same mistakes over and over and over again, particularly like throwing off his back foot when he tried to throw down the middle, overthrow it, and the safety would grab it. You know, you don't see Darnold making the same mistake twice. I think you really got to like this kid's mental acumen.
Mm-hmm. No, I do, and I like the fact that, I mean, again, I have not varied. Hey, listen, Baker Mayfield is better than I expected, but Sam Darnold was the best quarterback in the draft, and he went to the Jets.
Well, it's kind of an unfair comparison in some regards, because I think Mayfield's got a lot more talent around him.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly has a much better offensive line than Darnold does.
Right.
You know, so I think that's a little bit of an unfair comparison at this stage. But you can't complain. I mean, yeah, the Jets still have a lot more building around him, but you gotta like what you see.
Agreed. No, I think that it's very encouraging to see where they are and what they're doing, and I think that because again, they're kind of surprising people. I mean, if they can get to an 8-8 season, I don't think that was anything you expected.
Oh no, I thought 6 wins, maybe 7, was likely, maybe a bit of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, if they get to 8-8, I think that'd be just about a huge win. The thing that really impresses me, John, is because they've always had trouble in that week four. Remember they had that blow-up in Kansas City?
Right.
And they've gone to Oakland a couple times and just melted down.
Mm-hmm.
They melted down in San Diego there when Geno Smith couldn't figure out what time it was. Make a team meeting,
right?
And yet, and again, they melted down in Jacksonville. But you know, that was that. The season could have gone horribly wrong at that point in time, especially when you got so many free agent receivers. For example, you know, I can see them getting to be a bit of I mean mine if that season starts to go awry.
Mm-hmm.
But they've turned it around these last couple weeks, and you just kind of, I mean, they're playing hard. You know, they've got flaws, obviously, but you know, whatever happens this week against the Vikings, you know, they're somewhat outclassed a bit, and I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball very well. But and their defensive secondary is just obliterated. But, you know, they're playing hard, and, you know, you got to like those last two wins just simply because they didn't fold. They could have folded against the Colts, for example. And the season's kind of turned around. It just seems to be still a positive attitude. So I got to give the coaching staff a bit of credit for that because, man, after that Jacksonville game, this thing could have gone down the toilet real fast.
No question. So that's the encouraging part. Hey, Jet, hang in there. It's getting good.
All right. Well, at least it's interesting, John.
Yeah, agreed.
We have hope. We have hope.
That would be good. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Elliot in Seattle. Hey, Elliot.
Hi there, tenured Professor Clayton.
How are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Big day with my Cougs today going on game day. And just had a couple questions for you. I was seeing if you think that Chris Peterson or Mike Leach could ever get an NFL look. And then my second question was, with just sources you have or guys like Schefter, and, you know, I figure NFL programs have their sources on lockdown, or, you know, is the information they're giving you, like, okayed by the general manager, or is this people risking their job by giving you information that they should?
It's all over the place. I mean, you talk to whoever you get a chance to talk to. And so, I mean, you know, the assistant coaches, you know, the head coach, you talk to the personnel people and all that. So, no, I mean, it's not, there's no approval thing. I mean, basically, you get the information as you get the information. Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here. Give you a college football scoreboard update. They're at the end of the first quarter. Michigan State, they did start the game. Delayed by weather, scoreless. Oklahoma is having a tough one against TCU, 28-24. It's Iowa 13, Maryland nothing. Cincinnati and Temple tied at 10. Wisconsin blowing out Illinois, 28-10. It's Toledo 17, Buffalo 7. Arkansas leading Tulsa, 10-0. It's Auburn 10, Ole Miss 6. Rutgers over Northwestern, 12-7. Army 14, Miami nothing. Syracuse edging North Carolina 13-7. It's Virginia 14, Duke nothing. Those are the scores in college football. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Tell you what we'll do, we'll take a break and come back. Guess who's going to be coming up to talk next from over in Coug country? It's Jim Moore getting ready for today's game with Washington State against Oregon. Jim Moore coming up next. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.